This is the Inner Change Maker with Jay Wong, the podcast dedicated to purpose-driven entrepreneurs and multi-passionate individuals. Tune in each week as we bring you an inspiring person and message to help you activate and tap into your inner change maker. Thanks for spending some time with us today, and let's get started. Hey guys, today I have a real treat for you. We have Nana Osei on the show. Now, Nana is a social entrepreneur on a mission to create a compost management initiative in Ghana that reuses reclaimed material to design and manufacture his eco-luxury eyewear line. And they operate under the name of Bolton. Drawing on his Ghanaian roots, his eyeglasses have actually been featured in Elle Magazine, Dragon's Den, and they could be found in many pop-up stores across Canada. And he recently just launched his own in-house manufacturing company in Canada, and obviously they look to do the same in Ghana. I really, really love their vision, and I love this conversation because, you know, they're not only trying to change the fashion game, but they're trying to make an impact and provide jobs to the people of Ghana. And this is honestly such a great episode if you're looking to launch a business with a social impact behind it. Nana literally walks you through exactly how he overcame some of his initial fears, even what, you know, he goes into details into what happens after they went to Dragon's Den and didn't get the deal that they wanted. And all around, it is super educational. I will warn you guys that the audio is a bit rough on this one, but the conversation was just too good not to put it up. So without any further delays, let's dive into it. Nana, thank you so much for, you know, joining us, and, you know, welcome to the Your Inner Changemaker podcast.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for having me on your podcast. And it's pretty exciting to see what you're doing, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, you know, I figured change makers trying to support other change makers in hopes of, you know, trying to distill some great tactics and strategies for future change makers, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I truly believe that we definitely have to lean on each other sometimes to keep going forward, or keep moving forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. So why don't you, I know I did a bit of an intro already, but why don't you maybe in 90 seconds, or, you know, I'll give you 2 minutes, tell us, how did you end up kind of doing what you're doing right now?
I'm not even sure where to start.
You can start wherever you feel comfortable with.
Yeah. A bit about my background. I'm the CEO and founder of Bolton Inc. And Bolton Inc. is made up of Bolton eyeglasses and Bolton, now Bolton manufacturing. So, like, I got into the industry through a lot of the concepts that I had earlier on about practices or philosophies that needed to be practiced, like sustainable design, sustainable manufacturing, CSR. I'm a big advocate for change in Africa. Originally, I'm from West Africa, Ghana, but I've been based in Canada for about 7-8 years now. So I got into eyewear as an experiment, really. I used to do eco-friendly events where we would showcase sustainable lifestyle products. And I wanted to do something that was more passionate about my own beliefs and about giving back to what I believe in, which is mainly having clear and concise waste management initiatives, and also supporting the local economy through manufacturing and creating jobs.
No, I think that's phenomenal. And I mean, do you guys, I know it's kind of like reclaimed wood from Ghana. Is that the relationship there? I mean, minus, you know, obviously your background connection?
Yeah, so the model that we are developing right now is using reclaimed and recycled materials to make handmade eyewear. in Ghana and also in Canada. And we've been doing this for about 3 years now. And obviously, it's entered different stages of our mission. So just to be clear, right now we are not making anything in Ghana. How we started is we're sourcing material from West Africa, primarily Ghana, and outsource them to make high-end designer handmade sustainable eyewear. And the overall vision is to, number one, give access to eyewear in Africa to impact people who are visually impaired, but also to create jobs on the African continent. But to do that, we have to go through a place where we could do a lot of trial and error, which is where we are at right now in Canada. So we just opened up our first factory in Canada. And I mean, I can't tell you how many obstacles we've had to go through to even get to this point, and how many people, not to say write us off, but don't take what we're doing seriously because, you know, they don't see the vision, you know. And I mean, I guess that's up to us to make the vision clearer, you know, and that's what we keep on doing, you know. So we start out outsourcing our manufacturing in South Asia, and so we would sell them material from Africa, and they would have all the machinery. And then after that, we went into manufacturing over here in Canada. So within the next year or so, we're going to open another manufacturing plant in Ghana. And like I said, the plan is to have a waste management initiative that allows us to use the material that we manufacture in Canada for the Canadian or North American population, and do the same thing, have a waste management initiative in Ghana for our manufacturing plant over there. And that way it stays strictly local, but it's also global.
I think it's really powerful, you know, for a lot of, like, maybe a lot of listeners, people are, you know, want to one day be an entrepreneur. Some people are entrepreneurs already. It's so important to have that kind of that grand vision, that, you know, that greater why, as, you know, Simon Sinek with his famous TED Talk, I don't even remember when, but a few years back, you know, people don't buy what you do. They always buy the story, they always buy why you do things. And I'm sure, you know, in telling your story, you know, the last 3 years and how you've been able to, you know, get some investors on board and how you even got to, you know, where you guys are now, I'm sure it's been such a journey of, you know, trial and error and actually getting to meet, you know, the right people that can actually help you guys, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an ongoing journey, really, so to speak. And it's been interesting, just the evolution of what we've been doing and how we've been doing it. I think we've had very, very little resources starting out, and we've done a good job of using the very little that we have to make something.
Well, I was actually like watching some of your, I know that you guys are kind of infamous for being on Dragon's Den a couple times. And, you know, as I was kind of watching some of those clips, I mean, what was, you know, the experience of going through that? I'm sure that was a huge learning curve as well.
It was priceless. It was overwhelming, priceless, but it was exciting at the same time. And you never really feel like you're ready, but you know, you gotta do it anyway, right? So like I learned a lot about just managing the business and structuring the business through Dragon's Den, and what, in terms of what you really need to grow a company, what investors are looking for, and how to really create impact without sacrificing, you know, your mission for social responsibility. Because a lot of times people are not sure how to combine social CSR or your mission for environmental awareness or fair trade or whatever it is with how to run a viable business, you know? And that's something that we've kind of had to learn on the fly. But I mean, I've learned that the more personal experience, the more personal you can be about your story and your journey, the more people are going to relate to it, you know? So like, that's definitely one thing that helped us on Dragon's Den, last few years. And it's definitely something that is helping us on a regular basis. So, you know, we're definitely blessed in that aspect.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with, you know, I think transparency is more and more on the rise, you know, being authentic, you know, being as authentic as one can possibly be, being, you know, kind of unscripted and being, you know, as human as possible. I think that's really on the rise, you know, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, the emerging technology and social media. You know, there's so much type of content out there, and the only type of content that will survive are the ones that are the most authentic. And so I love your story. I love, you know, how you guys kind of got to where you guys are. Did you always like know kind of growing up that you were going to be an entrepreneur? What drew you, I guess, initially to be an entrepreneur?
I didn't know growing up I was going to be an entrepreneur. I think what really drew me was I failed out my first year of university when I was doing my science degree. And I went into university clueless, and I didn't know why I was there, what I was going to do. But having that experience where, like, flunking out of school, it kind of changes you a little bit because it forces you to really be consider everything that you're doing and why you're doing it and how you're doing it. And to me, it made me want to try new things, because if I'm not good at one thing, I'm certainly good at something else. And that's how it kind of started. And I tried all kinds of businesses within a span of three, four years. You know, a lot of them were successful, some of them weren't, but I at least learned from every experience that, well, I love another experience that, you know, you're not meant to nail every opportunity. Sometimes you fail, sometimes you don't. So when you fail, you learn a lot more and you tweak what you're doing. You know, so like I started doing events with a company that I used to run in university called Legal Empire, and the main goal of Legal Empire was to have a green mandate for lifestyle brands that we showcase our venues. And things kind of evolved from that, because I learned a lot more about really just branding and how to incorporate sustainable lifestyle into a lot of things. And I think in terms of me being an entrepreneur, that was kind of the early stages trying to figure out how to create something literally from scratch, literally from concepts that you've had in your book and trying to make it a reality. And it starts small, like events is obviously a very small example. I was also involved in a vertical garden hydroponic project in my third or fourth year.
There is always a connection to, I guess, the whole sustainability aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. I was an environmental science major initially, so like there was definitely a deep connection to that. But I think so the creative side of me as an entrepreneur was born early on in school, because I tried all kinds of creative events, all kinds of products. But I think the business side of me developed later on after I was done with school. So yeah, I think in a lot of times people are afraid to just try stuff, you know, because the society has so many pressures of how things should be, you know. I mean, like, you know, you how many times do you hear about, you know, the overnight success story of Facebook or Microsoft or whoever? And like,
yeah, no, well, I was reading I think her name is Carol Dweck. I'm probably butchering the last name, but she wrote this book on mindset, and she talks about in this book, it talks about having two different types of mindsets, right? One is the fixed mindset versus the growth mindset. And, you know, she had like a list of, you know, different distinctions. For example, people, you know, with a fixed mindset, once they come up to, you know, challenges and obstacles, they would give up easily. Whereas the growth mindset, you would be, you know, trying to figure out, you'd be proactive and trying to figure out how to, you know, find a creative way to get over this roadblock or get over this obstacle. And, you know, a big part of that is, you know, when you're in your academic system, you're told, you know, failure and success is a binary thing, right? If you fail out of school, then you're on this side, you know, and if you don't fail, then you're on this side. But when it comes to entrepreneurism, when it comes to like real life situations, I think it's so critical to have that growth mindset, because failure doesn't mean that you failed. Failure just means that you have to learn, you know, certain lessons. It means that you kind of have to, you know, be more creative in finding that answer. And it's more of an opportunity to learn than, you know, to feel bad and everything. I mean, do you think that, you know, there's so many stories of, you know, entrepreneurs like dropping out of school or failing out of school, and then, you know, they have similar stories to you. Do you think that that was like a benefit looking back?
I think it definitely was a benefit, because I mean, there's a saying that says fail and fail early, and that essentially just means learn. You got to learn what you need to learn, and if you're not learning it fast enough, you're gonna have a lot of problems later on. There's so many people who go through life or school or whatever without any bumps or anything. Everything has just been laid out for them, from going from school to 9 to 5 to getting your dream house and all that. And that's great. But I mean, we live in the real world, and you're always going to have challenges that you may not have know how to deal with. And learn how to deal with a lot of situations early on, especially if the unpleasant, is really important to you growing as a person versus you just shying away from things that you're afraid of, you know? One thing that I learned earlier on is learning how to face my own fears. And I mean, yeah, it's definitely not easy, but I mean, when you learn that, you know, that the worst will not kill you in any situation, you become more comfortable with it. And the other thing is not trying to conform to what everybody wants or thinks you should be doing, and just doing what you want to do, even if people don't understand what
people
you're doing.
See that vision that you have as well.
Yeah.
I think fear is such a big thing. You know, I talk a lot about it sometimes in some of the work I do with, you know, schools and universities, but, you know, I think fear is like, it's so instrumental, because sometimes people just come up to fear and it's, you know, they're out of their comfort zone, for example, and, you know, they tend to pull back, or they, you know, they tend to not go through it because, you know, it's fearful because it's something new. And, you know, just remember, like, I don't know, like, I remember, like, riding a bike, right? When you're new to riding a bike, of course, it's new, it's awkward, you fall from time to time, maybe you, like, scrape your knee, you're bleeding, you kind of just look like a whole mess, but no one tells you, like, oh, like, you can't ride a bike right now, you might as well give up because you're scared, you know, or you're scared of, like, hurting yourself. People say, like, oh, you gotta learn this, you gotta keep going. Right. And it's funny, they don't say the same thing for, you know, creating businesses or creating life.
Yeah. It should be the same thing for everything. But I mean, there's certain things that people just don't know how to look at, you know, like starting your own business is seen by many as as a suicide mission, just because the stats say 9 out of 10 businesses fail or whatever, you know, and that's great. I mean, I failed a few businesses. That's the truth. It doesn't mean that one idea or that one concept that you have can go somewhere. And I think more than anything, people are attached to ideas, and that's the other thing. You can't be attached to any of your ideas, because one idea might be great right now, but it can easily evolve into a completely different idea or a completely different model, you know? And that's how business is. Business changes every single day, you know? It's not static, it's dynamic.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not static. It's a pretty lively thing. You definitely have to be in it. Is there like an example of you, I guess, like it's a little personal, but I mean, is there an example in your mind that something that you were really fearful of and then you actually went ahead and did it?
When I was doing events in university, I think one of the biggest fears I had was doing an event where people would not show up, you know, because that's just horrible. But I realized that, you know, early on I had to face that, because like things are not always going to go as planned. So that was definitely one of my biggest fears, doing an event or doing something, a social gathering, and people not showing up. And there were at least two or three times where I did events where literally almost no one showed up, you know? And it was tough, because people not showing up, you lose time, use money too. But I mean, after it happened like one or two times, it was okay. It was okay to deal with, you know. And it was really about learning how to deal with failure, period. And I think that's really helped me deal with real life situations when I'm running my own business. Because like, I mean, I can't tell you how many people will come to you, show interest in what you're doing and whatever, want to work with you, but a lot of times things won't work out. And I was actually with one of my mentors like an hour ago, and he was talking about, you know, one of the biggest things that he's learned is you can be intrigued by a lot of opportunities, but you can't be attached. Same with opportunities that you create for yourself, or same with things that you do, or you attempt to do. Like, you can create it, but you can't be attached to it, because whatever happens does not make you less of a person. I think what people do is they identify with the situation or the event and make it them. It's not the same thing. You are one person, and that's one event in your life.
Yeah, no, it's, there used to be this concept called the gap in when my days at Strategic Coach. And the gap concept is when people start measuring, you know, they have these goals, they have these ideals, and they start measuring themselves against these goals and these ideals. And it's not to tell people that they shouldn't set the bar high. It's not to tell people that they shouldn't set high goals. But what happens when you start measuring your own self-worth against these ideals is typically, you know, very negative types of emotions, anxiety. You have, you know, your fear that you're just not good enough. And the right way of, you know, trying to measure success is actually, you know, measuring yourself backwards to see where, you know, how, you know, Nana, where you were 3 years ago, to see, you know, how much growth, and even see where you were in university when no one would, you know, come to your events, right? And how much you've really learned, you know, and that's, I think that breeds more of a thinking for gratitude, right? And that's a way better way, in my opinion, to measure kind of self-worth and success in my eyes.
Yeah, for sure. I think that really comes down to it. You know, you can't be really attached to like what people may or may not think. You know, things are going to completely change. I mean, if you look at a lot of the really innovative companies in the world, like Apple, Apple's industrial design. It's like the touch screens are a great example. And people talk about how, like, when the touchscreen first came out, everybody thought it was a horrible idea. So it was like, well, like, why would anyone want to use a touchscreen, you know? But Apple went through and developed it anyway. Because to them, it wasn't about following the trends. It was about creating the trends. And those are the kind of risks that you have to take if you really want to be self-fulfilled, you know? You can't. And it sucks, but like you have to take calculated risks, and you know.
I love that. You know, don't follow the trends. Try to go ahead and create them.
Yeah, I mean, even us right now, even where we're at right now, I still consider us still behind in some aspects, and I still see people who still don't fully get it. You know, and that's fine. You know. Knowing that you can make a decision, whatever, and people are not going to understand it, it's fine. It's just part of the process, really.
Well, you know, I absolutely, you know, love, you know, everything you really had to say. To switch gears just a little bit, I always like to end with like a kind of like a rapid fire session, even though they just end up being, you know, some of the same questions. But, you know, what are some books that you maybe you can recommend to our audience that you personally have read at least twice?
That one's easy. Think and Grow Rich by Robert Kiyosaki. That's a good one.
Yeah, Think and Grow Rich.
And Outliers. Outliers is one of my favorites.
Malcolm Gladwell, right? Kind of falls in the whole, like, don't necessarily follow the trend, try to, you know, create your own.
Mm-hmm. Or know the timing of when things are happening, right? Because, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, if what you're doing, if you create something at a specific time, at a specific place, it might have a different result than if you did it at a different time. You know, so understanding time is a huge one. You know, like people can't think that you can start a business, fail a few times, and still succeed. But it's a lot harder to do that when you're 40, 45, right?
Sure. But you know, if you are listening to this and you happen to be in that age group, I mean, it is never too late.
No. That's just an example I was giving. I just really, what I meant was like time is everything. So, you know, whatever it is, whatever opportunity there is that's there that you want to take, you know, just really go for it.
Yeah, no, the time is, you know, even more valuable of a resource than money, right? Mm-hmm. I say time and time again, even on this podcast, right? People are not paying to listen to this, but you're paying with time. And I think I value that so much more than money. What is like a favorite productivity hack that you might have that maybe, you know, you can share with us?
I think my favorite one is how to make things inevitable. It's a concept that I learned from Eden Pagan. And it just talks about how a lot of things that we want in our life, or a lot of the goals that you have, for example, our goal to open a factory in Ghana, or our goal that was to open a factory in Canada first, it seemed impossible because of A, B, C. But if you just visualize how things would be at that time and take those steps to get to that place. Like, for example, even if you actually picture it in your head, like, you know exactly where you are, what you're doing, whatever, at a time where you fulfill what you want to be inevitable. Literally, you know, the brain cycles in your head would visualize it happen. It's a really cool concept that I use a lot, you know, just making things inevitable that you want to be inevitable. Regardless of how high the mountain is or how high the tide is, you can literally make anything inevitable if you really put your mind to it. But more than put your mind to it, set yourself up to have that be inevitable.
For sure, for sure. Just to add on to that, I mean, I love like visualization and making things, you know, inevitable, as you say. Another one is like not necessarily knowing how, like not knowing how it's going to happen, because it's very likely that it's going to happen. It has nothing to do with, you know, what you're doing, but you don't necessarily need to plan every little step. Just know that the end result is inevitable and enjoy the ride, enjoy the journey.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, hey, Nana, I know you're a busy guy, and I really appreciate you being able to even spend, you know, 30 minutes with us. So why don't you just tell our audience, if they wanted to, I guess, see some of the designs that you guys have coming out for the summer, where could they find you, and where can they kind of, you know, buy some of these sunglasses?
The easiest place, depending on where you are, but the easiest place to find us is online at bohtang.com. That's bohten.com. And we also have some boutiques that we sell out of. So we can, depending on what area you're in, you can also find it at our retail stores. But more than anything, I think if you go direct, you more likely find whatever you need in the most efficient manner.
That's awesome, man. I know I have a couple pair of your sunglasses, and they're really great. And so let's end on that note. And thank you so much for being on the show. And we'll talk to you next time.
Okay. Thank you, Jay, for having me on the show.
That is it for this week's interview. Did you like what you heard? If so, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. We're building a community together for changemakers under the belief that together we can change the world. Join the movement at www.theinnerchangemaker.com. You can also go there for show notes and additional resources not provided in the podcast. Until next time, live with passion, live your dream, and live it now.